Welcome back to North Idaho Now. This is episode 55 for August 10th. Chance Watson and Josh McDonald bring you the news today. Josh, who's sponsoring us today?
This episode is brought to you by Bank CDA. What is your relationship status with your bank? It's time to go steady with Bank CDA. You want local, you want flexible, you want Bank CDA. To learn more, please visit bankcda.com.
Speaking of statuses of things, Josh, what's the status of your tooth?
It's still missing. Still not there anymore.
Yet to find it.
Yeah. No, I found it. I saw it.
Oh, did they give it back to you?
No. I took a look at it, though. The roots were all, like, frayed out. It was awful. That was the worst. That was... And then I was in so much pain, and they had, like, numbed me up to my eyeball. Like, I've never been numb that high up. Well, it seems like it was, from what we've gathered, it was caused by, like, a rogue sinus infection that, like, went into my gums somehow.
Sure.
Never heard of that, but apparently it's a thing for those of us with weak genetics.
Yeah, isn't that what the doctor told you?
The doctor basically made me sound like, oh, well, you're fragile. No, it was all right. You know what, though? I'm going to just give a little piece of advice to area dentists. Be open on Fridays, guys. I know you guys went to school and you can set your own hours, but dentists not being open on Fridays for some reason. Apparently, tooth pain doesn't happen Friday, Saturday, or Sunday.
Doesn't.
So you only have to be open Monday through Thursday. Appalling. And incredibly frustrating, but...
Can be minorly inconvenient.
Oh, my gosh.
To say it lightly.
I ended up in urgent care on Friday night, waiting for a dentist appointment on Monday morning.
Oh. Say, ER, they don't do emergency dental, do they?
No, they just give you antibiotics and pain medication and tell you get a dentist appointment. At this point, I think we should just all pull our teeth. Just get fake ones or implants.
See, I have brought this up. I don't know if I ever talked this over on the podcast, but think about, like, with our modern age of technology, we're still not quite there where the majority of the fake pieces we could get are not as good as the original. So, like, an arm. Yeah, are fake arms getting even better? Absolutely. They're a far cry from, you know, a sharp stick or something.
Right.
But they're still not as good as your original arm. Eyes, you know, all that kind of stuff. Teeth might be the rare exception.
They absolutely are.
Where we can get you your new teeth, like man-made teeth, are definitely better than your original teeth.
Yes.
Like almost in every way.
Yes.
Like I know that there's the stigma around dentures of like the grossness of taking that one, but that could be kind of handy, you know?
They would be easier to clean.
Yep.
You eliminate a lot of things like gum disease.
Yep. Not having to worry. So there is that aspect of, but we're not there yet. Like we're not, I've heard jokes like, you know, like if we get cool robot, like Luke Skywalker gets his hand cut off and gets a new robot arm. That's a joke from Dan Cummins. He talks about that. He's like, guess who's cutting their hand off tonight? If that comes on the market tomorrow.
Right. I don't know. I don't know that I could sit there and let them pull every single one of my teeth. I think I would have to be unconscious.
Oh yeah. They'd have to knock me out for sure. But the new teeth.
Yeah.
Then you never have to worry about it.
Yeah.
You still got to brush them, but you take them out.
Pull them out and brush them.
Yeah. You just pull them out and brush them.
In fact, you put them in stuff.
Let them. Yeah.
It easier to brush them.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
They probably stay whiter because they're not made of,
the pros outweigh the cons.
Absolutely.
Really do.
Well, I'm still not going to like get off the show and pull my teeth, but
I might.
Just get it over with.
Just get it done and over with.
I'd like to get to that point where we've got, I mean, you know, like fake, I've seen some really cool fake legs. They actually like bend at the, cause you know, there's the simple ones that are just like the backward swoosh.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. The ones that like this,
like pogo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Oscar Pistorius.
Yes.
The
correct.
Blade Runner.
Correct. But there's also ones that like move at the knee. Like they actually like bend. Yeah, they mimic the motion.
Right.
They still don't look like normal, like a normal human leg, but they mimic the motion better.
Yeah.
Which could probably be helpful as well in just, you know, getting it down. Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder, like, and we're not even at the point yet where like we have fake organs. Are there?
There's mechanical hearts.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought you could get like mechanical pieces.
No, you can get a full mechanical heart.
Really?
Uh-huh. I know a guy.
Does it work?
Yeah. It's definitely not like a permanent solution.
Oh, okay.
But
like he's waiting for a heart transplant.
Kind of. Yeah.
Okay. So
a heart will always be designed. They can make a machine. I mean, your kidneys, a dialysis machine is basically kidneys.
Yeah.
But
you're not going to go run a marathon on dialysis.
Right. But when you think about how big kidneys actually are,
right,
compared to what a dialysis machine looks like,
sure,
you're like, wow, those kidneys are pretty important.
Right.
Mechanical heart, while it can do the exact thing about pumping blood and all that, it's still a foreign entity in the body, which is not welcome.
Still not better than the actual
heart.
Yeah.
Unlike the teeth. This is not something that is actually better.
Well, so, and we'll get to that. Okay.
General Grievous still was all robot except for like heart and lungs.
Right.
He still maintained those bad boys.
He did.
For obvious reasons.
He did. And we could get to that. We could get to that. Like I was playing, not to dive off onto a video game tangent, but Cyberpunk. And in that.
Oh, the worst game ever. Yeah.
It's not the worst game ever, but it's there. Not good. Definitely an unfinished game for sure. But in any case, like there's like a gang in that they're almost more cyborg than human.
Yeah.
You know, they've gotten so many augmentations that it's kind of there. It's interesting to think about though. Like, I mean, parts that would simulate just what you do, but then you go beyond like teeth. Again, we mentioned like they're better than the original. They wouldn't just simulate another set of teeth. Like they're better than your other teeth. Like when we get to that point where like eyes, like that'd be cool. Like electronic eyes where like you can zoom in maybe or.
Seems terrifying.
I mean like that, but that, you know, kind of to that point, like simple stuff along those lines.
Sure.
That'd be very interesting.
Yeah.
Gets into like cyborg stuff and futuristic
sci-fi. If my first step towards my cyborg personality. Persona is fresh teeth. I guess that's the route I'm going. I don't know. It's pretty bad though. I've never, anyone who's ever experienced tooth pain knows that it is like, it gets worse at nighttime.
Oh,
it gets worse when you lay down.
Yeah.
You almost have to like get up and distract yourself into doing something else that allows you to not think about it because the second you sit down and become idle, you think about it.
I still have to go get my wisdom teeth out one day. Well, maybe. I don't know. They're still not out yet.
Giddy up, partner.
Yeah, I'm not. I've been told that I need to get it done sooner than later.
Yes. Yes, you probably should.
They just, they hurt maybe once a year when I'm like stressed or something, and then that's about it. And it goes away.
They're massive too. I still don't understand. Yeah. They must have been like an evolutionary like thing that we were like, we no longer need.
They were phasing out a lot of stuff like because of that. I was just watching it was like a video that was like a mishmash of like how the human body was not designed by an engineer. Like, you know, like somebody in an engineering firm. Right. Because there's a lot of things that would just not.
Appendix.
Right. And like there's a lot of useless things like tonsils and, you know, you've got teeth. And then like just how our human bodies work. Like we have like tubes that go up and then come back down for no reason.
Right.
Like it's, you know, there's a lot of things that just are not kind of just happen because they happen.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. And I think tooth pain might be right up there with one of those things that I'm like, you know, I've torn my ACL and not been in nearly as much pain as what was going on inside my head last week.
Right.
But.
Well, we get to that point where, I mean, back in the 70s, everybody thought that food was just going to be a pill.
Right.
That's which I'm not advocating for, but at the same time, I wish that was kind of an option sometimes.
Be convenient.
Right. Like I'm not saying like I want to replace food with just like, oh, do you want the blue lunch or the red lunch? Matrix reference.
Yes.
I wouldn't want that, but like on days where I'm like, okay, I need to eat something, I just don't have time. It'd be easy to like just.
I think it's the mental aspect that people. I bet there probably is like a pill meal that gives you all the nutrients you need, probably has the protein that you need without your body having to break down.
Would stuff. It also give you the sense of like fullness though?
That's the problem. Mm. That's because fullness is a mental state, not a
right
a survival state.
Correct.
So
I mean, it's there, but it's. I mean,
if they made
when you start feeling hungry, you're days away from starvation. Yeah. You're not. You know, I didn't eat this morning. I'm really hungry. Right. You know, like okay, you're not really hungry. Like you could go literally.
If they made that pill out of chia seeds. That expand
like chia.
I mean, I think it's the same concept.
Okay. Wow, great early 2000s 90s reference right there.
Yeah. Chia seeds expand as yes. they absorb liquids. Uh-huh. So if you were to take this pill with a glass of water mm-hmm. and it had all the nutrients you needed in it, mm-hmm. and then they expanded, you would feel full. And chia seeds are actually good for you. So.
So what you're saying is that
I have a really good idea. Apparently.
What you're saying is that Clint needs to buy us chia pets.
I mean,
is that what you're getting at?
This office is kind of sad.
We could use
some greenery.
What would be the bust?
I would prefer a.
I remember a Darth Vader when I was growing up.
Yeah. A Star Wars one would be cool. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I would not mind a Incredible Hulk one.
Ooh, that'd be cool.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Or I also like the ones where like it makes sense. Like there was a Chewbacca one.
Or the little porcupine.
Yes.
The OG.
Yes, another good one.
The OG Chia Pet.
Chia.
Those are the weirdest.
We are not sponsored by. I don't know if that's a company or not. They're probably owned by somebody.
Like Hasbro or something.
Yeah,
like
Hasbro that. Owned yeah. Chia.
Yeah.
I don't think they're called Chia. Just
Chia Pet.
You can't just call it Chia Pet. It's Chia.
I mean, they can.
It's hard to, though.
That is wild. What does that do? Is that going to take us right into the news?
Nah, it's going to take us into the news. But first off, Hecla Mining Company is a leading low-cost silver producer with operating silver mines in Alaska, Idaho, and Mexico, and is a growing gold producer with operating mines in Quebec, Canada, and Nevada. They are the largest primary silver producer in the U.S., responsible for one-third of the silver produced in our nation. Their philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting a deeply rooted, value-based culture, leveraging mining skills developed over the company's long history, and by innovating new practices. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit heclamining.com. We'll actually talk a little bit about Hecla and the Lucky Friday when we get into the Shoshone News Press headlines.
Excellent.
But first, the Coeur d'Alene Post Falls Press headlines, starting with Saturday, August 7th.
It's my birthday.
Mm-hmm. What do we have?
Headline, Big Wheels Keep on Turning. This is by Hannah Neff. Sometimes the best way to understand a person's struggles is to stand in their shoes, or in this case, ride their wheels. Coeur d'Alene Mayor Steve Widmeyer and City Council members Kiki Miller, Dan English, Amy Evans, and Christy Wood got a behind-the-wheel experience on Friday afternoon as they navigated Sherman Avenue to understand the challenges faced by the wheelchair community. Mm. Quote, you have no idea how it is to maneuver in a chair until you're in one, Widmeyer said, after finishing the stretch, showing off a blister on his thumb. Quote, you just don't know the work that it takes to navigate that, so it's really a learning experience. Denise Jessica, a member of the Coeur d'Alene Pedestrian Bicycle Advisory Committee who organized the event, said the idea for the trip came from a post on Facebook where she saw a similar wheelchair challenge hosted in a different town. Quote, I thought, what a great idea, Jessica said. I've seen a lot of issues around town, not just downtown, but around town. We need assistance for people with disabilities. Improperly placed sandwich boards on sidewalks, bicycles leaned against trees, and sidewalks downtown are three examples of hazards the disabled community struggles with. Quote, when you're in this position, there's a big difference between really level and kinda level, said Councilman Dan English. Quote, it's certainly more physically demanding than you think or realize. Jessica said she hopes by having city officials directly experience these struggles, it will bring awareness to the disabled community as well as more consideration for their needs when city codes are modified or put in place. Quote, we're bringing together a lot of key decision makers, and so by letting them experience this firsthand, we're hoping that when they make decisions in the future, they keep those experiences, said Tessa Gillette, chair of the Coeur d'Alene Pedestrian and Bicycle Advisory Committee. Wow. That quote, when you're in this position, there's a big difference between really level and kind of level. Mm-hmm. When you're in a wheelchair.
Oh, yeah. Even a small incline is going to...
You're going to find the kind of level spots are not nearly as level as you wish they were.
Yeah. I think that that's actually a really cool story. I think that that's cool that they went out and experienced that.
Yeah. I saw the art with it. The photo with it was kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. All right. Moving on. Unthinkable. This is by Ellie Goldman Hilbert. The recent acts of vandalism at Tullamore Park in Post Falls have the makings of someone possibly driven by sadistic impulses or a compulsive behavior, according to child psychologist Heather Ryle Crest of Big Lake Psychology Services in Coeur d'Alene. Mental health therapist Scott Burke from the Heritage Health said that behavior is, quote, that of a sociopath at least. An unidentified vandal inserted a screw through the surface of the slide twice this week. The fact that it was done at the same park on the same slide is significant, both experts say. Quote, committing the act once shows malintent, but doing it twice, now it has that feeling of human evil, Burke said. The action was not accidental. It sounds as if the vandal is antisocial, but this can lead to other levels of psychopathy or sociopathy, he said. Although it's impossible to know what's going on in the mind of the perpetrator, there are notable signs, Rallycrest said. Quote, there are risk factors that might drive some to these behaviors, she said. Repetition often signifies a compulsion, an irresistible strong urge to perform a certain behavior. Sometimes you have people who are disconnected from society at large or may not have a lot of social support or connections, or it could have been done for a very specific reason, she said. Quote, most vandalism is perpetrated by adolescent boys, Rahel Crest said, but it could be an adult. Burke notes that teenagers often display a lack of judgment, but this goes beyond to an attempt to injure random people. The fact that the vandalism was not accompanied with graffiti, words, or symbols could imply that a very specific message was intended. It's almost like, I don't know if she did. It's almost like Ellie heard the last episode of the podcast and, you know, Madison and I speculated, you know, we talked about, you know, what motivated who this might be, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I said at that time, it did seem to me like something, you know, a teenager would do, you know,
right.
Somebody who's running around just trying to be a juvenile delinquent kind of thing. And not realizing how serious the situation is, most likely. So it looks like Ellie kind of looked into that and I appreciate it. Everything that they said totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Hopefully they look into it or at the very least it just stops happening.
Right. Moving on to Sunday, August 8th, headline, moratorium on growth, not an option. This is by Ellie Goldman Hilbert. Extreme growth in Kootenai County, especially on the prairie, is at the forefront of many citizens' minds. Some are asking why there isn't a moratorium on new construction projects. Post Falls Mayor Ron Jacobson and City Attorney Warren Wilson can answer that question fairly simply, but with an asterisk. It's illegal. Now, about the asterisk. Quote, a moratorium requires an imminent peril. That there is a threat that something bad is going to happen, Wilson said in a recent interview with the press. Quote, say whatever you want about growth, but it's hard to say that there's an imminent peril. Oh, boy.
Hmm.
The city council has said, for example, that imminent peril would be a situation where, quote, capacity at a wastewater treatment plant has been exceeded. In the eyes of the council, there is no such threat on the horizon for the citizens of Post Falls, though some public opinion differs. In March, some residents insisted that the council examine a moratorium instituted about 40 years ago by Boulder City, Nevada, that limited the number of building permits to 100 allotments per year. Wilson elaborated to say Boulder City was, at the time, in the process of building a dam, and because the city owned property in question, they were able to parse it out in chunks. Noting the fact that building projects in Post Falls are done on privately owned land, the council emphasized that private property owners have many rights to do as they wish with their property. A petitioner attempting to bring a growth moratorium to a public vote later decided not to move forward, council members said. Quote, we really tried hard to give them as good an explanation as to why this doesn't work, Wilson said. So in a kind of an interesting segue here, capacity at a wastewater treatment plant being exceeded, we actually do have a similar situation over here,
mm-hmm.
where the capacity at one of our wastewater treatment facilities has been exceeded, and a group is trying to find a location for a new facility.
Mm-hmm.
that would actually cost the residents less money, but the residents are actually working against it. Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, a moratorium
abound everywhere.
A moratorium. I mean, it makes on the surface without any laws or anything. I would definitely be interested in something like that, but I understand that it's completely illegal unless there's certain circumstances. Sure. Yeah, I think it should be explored. I think we've talked about before, stopping growth is impossible. But controlling it, making sure it's done in a good way. That's doable. I think.
Yeah.
And should be done.
Yeah. All right. Mall on the Prairie proposed. This is also in the August 8th edition by Ellie Goldman Hilbert, who apparently is just writing everything these days. Developers are proposing a large shopping mall on 44 acres at the northeast corner of Highway 41 and Prairie Avenue. The Prairie Crossing subdivision project is led by local engineer Jack Smetana with Frame and Smetana PA. John Manley, city planning manager, will present the project at 5:30 p.m. tonight. That's Tuesday night at the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. The proposal calls for breaking up the 44.4 acres into 19 separate lots ranging from about half an acre to 7.5 acres. The 44 acres are agricultural but have been previously rezoned by the community for commercial services. CCS zoning allows for retail sales, professional use, service businesses, and some manufacturing or technical uses. That type of zoning can include everything from nursing homes to car rental companies to nightclubs and event centers. Designed as a regional center, the mall is expected to attract shoppers from outside the local area. Regional shopping centers typically house several large anchor stores surrounded by smaller shops and facilities. Quote, "You're going to see the evolution of various commercial properties along Prairie Avenue," Manley said. That fits in with city leaders' visions of attracting commercial development. Mayor Ron Jacobson has been vocal about that vision. Quote, "We will continue to work to attract businesses," Jacobson said. "But again, we do not go out and try to attract residents." Quote, "If you look at it percentage-wise, there have been more businesses located in Post Falls than any other city in Kootenai County," said Shelley Inderud, Post Falls City Administrator. So I'm assuming when they say shopping mall, because the days of the shopping mall similar to
it's not the Silver Lake Mall.
It's not the Silver Lake Mall. It's not even the Spokane Valley Mall. Mm. What I'm thinking is more like what they have across the street there in Spokane, where you have Old Navy, Dick's Sporting Goods.
Yeah, like what State Line Outlets used to be.
Nordstrom Rack. Yeah. And then you have like a few restaurants, like some chain restaurants, and then you start peppering in some of those other ones. That'd be really cool. And especially up there by Prairie, that's a cool little spot.
Yeah, I once again am it's the angel and the devil on my shoulders kind of thing or something like that. But it, I mean, on one hand, I think this is cool. I think that would be a good spot for business. Especially with all the work they've been doing on 41 right there. Like, I don't know if you've been out there recently, Josh, but okay. Yeah. They've been, I mean, there's an overpass there now.
Like the overpass is over the railroads and things like
that. Yeah. It's nuts. So, I mean, it's growing right there. So it's a good location and, you know, bringing more stuff to North Idaho is, I mean, good services are always good. I don't, you know, the quote from the mayor talking about how they don't, they attract business, but not residents. Okay. Well, when you attract businesses, you're going to bring in more residents. That's just going to happen.
Especially when the residents you currently have don't really seem too keen on.
And that goes back to the, you know, the local boy inside of me. I mean, it's going to suck, but I mean, in 10 years, there's probably not even, you're not even going to know, you know, the difference between Post Falls, Rathdrum and Coeur d'Alene and Hayden. Like they're all just going to be, you know, it's going to be like going from Boise to Meridian or, you know, Eagle to Meridian or something like you don't know,
right?
Like you don't know that you're jumping in between new cities. There's no dividing line. There's no empty spaces. It's just one large area. So, that upsets me, a little bit because it sucks to see the Prairie disappear, but
that's been happening.
But you're right.
To a lesser extent on the south end of, I-90 between Post Falls and Coeur d'Alene.
Yep.
There is no longer a break in the housing.
And it's happened multiple times already. I mean, I remember, actually, I don't necessarily remember a time, but there was a time you know, not too long before I was born, that there was a, you know, a definite line between like Coeur d'Alene and Hayden.
Right.
And that kind of, like, there was definitely some gaps.
Yeah.
So
I can remember that time.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. So, I mean, and Post Falls and Coeur d'Alene, you know, like on those, on the prairie area, it's still there roughly, you know, like that drive from 41 to, you know, Atlas or something. That's, there's enough empty space there, you know, you go, okay, right. Like I'm going, but you know, I basically like old Celtis. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's just one long continuation. You don't even know you go through Hutter.
Right.
Hutter might as well just be part of Post Falls or Coeur d'Alene.
Right.
And you wouldn't even know that you're going, because there's just, everything's developed there now.
So. Now on the north side of the highway in the Hutter area, mm-hmm. you definitely know mm-hmm. that you're in two different spots.
Sure. Absolutely. And that's still there. And I guess that just goes into the nostalgic person in me. And the reason why a lot of people move up here is to see the open prairie here. And it's, I mean, it's just, there is no open prairie anymore.
It's shrinking substantially.
Yep. It's a great time to sell your house because inventory is low, as we just talked about. Julie Zook with Silver Legacy Realty is a lifelong resident of the Silver Valley. She's a local realtor who is connected and knows every nook and cranny of our beautiful community. Contact Julie at 208-659-1764. She is your best friend in real estate. I haven't seen Julie in a while. I need to say hi to her.
You haven't seen her since her birthday. I'm sure she was out and about during the all-class reunion.
I didn't see her out there.
Really?
She's a Mullen girl.
She had both of her sons were out there.
Mm-hmm. I did not run into
her. She was flitting about somewhere.
Mm, we'll get into that.
This is Monday, August 9th. Net gain. Old friends stay sharp with morning tennis by Bill Bewley. Mm. Don Chisholm doesn't know it well. Well, maybe he does. But his colleagues are talking about him. They call him an inspiration, a role model, a delight to be around, and an honor to know. Quote, could you find another 93-year-old playing tennis? And if you watch him, he's really, really good, Bob Palmer says. Quote, he's the best. He can hit that ball back. He's such an example for me that I might be out here at 89. While Chisholm appreciates the accolades, there's one problem. Quote, I'm not even close to 93, he says, smiling as he approaches. Quote, what are you? He is asked. I'm 92, Chisholm says. That's a huge difference. The banter bounces back and forth like the balls at the tennis court at Lake City High School. It's here that a group of older men, usually about 15 of them, meet for a few hours, three mornings a week, to play the game they enjoy. As soon as the nets are set up in the spring until they come down in the fall, the friends gather together for games, sets, and matches. It keeps them young at heart, the sound of mind, and strong of body. Quote, we call it seniors tennis because we're all like 70 or older, says Bob Palmer, who is 70 years old. On this day, there's also Gary Mamola, age 78, Randy Pooley, the youngster at 68, David Wold, 81, and Mike Cheeley, also 81. Off the court, it's relaxed. On the court, a bit more serious. Doubles only, no singles. Rotating after each set, they serve and volley, hit forehands and backhands, and try their hands at lobs too. Some are tennis veterans. Others learned when they showed up at the high school courts. Whether it's drizzly spring morning, smoking hot summer day, or a frigid fall morning, a few are sure to show. Not even COVID-19 could keep them away. They say it's the camaraderie and the competition that keeps them coming out, and something else. Quote, it's social interaction. That's the word, Gary Mamola says. Chisholm, his day done, chats as he walks off the court. He hits some solid shots, both backhand and forehand, and is happy with his court coverage. While he does his best to stay active and likes hiking, he says there's another key to longevity of life. Quote, good genes. That's how you do it. Well,
what do you know about that, Josh?
I don't.
Apparently not so much.
Apparently nothing.
According to your very, very honest doctor.
Very honest dentist.
Dentist, yeah. All right, moving on to Tuesday, August 10th headlines. Kootenai Health says COVID rise, quote, exhausting resources. This is by Bill Bewley. Kootenai Health reported Monday it is seeing a, quote, unprecedented increase in COVID-19 patients that is exhausting resources and staff. Quote, the COVID-19 hospital census is rising at a faster rate than it did last winter, Kootenai Health CEO John Ness said. If this trend continues in just 5 days, we will surpass our previous COVID-19 high census from December 2020. Both Kootenai Health and the Panhandle Health District urged everyone who can be vaccinated to receive the COVID-19 vaccine. Kootenai Health had 68 COVID-19 patients on Monday, 29 of those requiring critical care. It had the highest number. It lat last had numbers that high in January, and in December had days of about 100 coronavirus patients. Quote, the strain is happening faster and is more severe, with the majority of cases being due to the highly contagious Delta variant statewide, a press release said. Kootenai Health has been running at near maximum capacity since early spring of 2021 and has postponed many elective procedures over the last several weeks due to hospital capacity, said Kootenai Health Chief Nursing Officer Joan Simmons. Quote, we are now postponing an elective all elective procedures that can wait for 6 to 8 weeks so we can redeploy staff to care for hospitalized patients, she said. In early July, Panhandle Health District was averaging 16 COVID-19 cases per day across all five counties, moving into the second week of August. PHE's jurisdiction is averaging 113 cases per day. The coronavirus positivity rate is also rising. In 3 weeks, PHD's positivity rate climbed to 13.6% the week ending in July 31st, up 4.3% on July 10th. Kootenai County's rose from 4% to 13.7% in that same three-week period. According to PHD press release and data from the Department of Health and Welfare, about 95% of COVID-19 cases, hospitalizations, and deaths in Idaho since May 15th were those not fully vaccinated. I think that's pretty much speaks for itself. Quote, the longer we wait to receive the vaccine, the greater community we are allowing the virus to mutate into additional and potential more deadly variants that could cause the current vaccine to be less effective, said Don Duffy, PhD interim director. PhD recommends, regardless of the vaccine status, consider adding back some layers of protection when they are in public settings. For those seeking to be tested for COVID-19, PhD's website has list providers and guidelines, such as whether a doctor referral is necessary, if an appointment is needed, or if they are testing only existing patients. Kootenai Health reported it also had the highest COVID-19 inpatient volumes in the state, more than double that of the inpatient census of the next busiest hospital, which is St. Alphonsus in Boise, with 30 COVID-19 patients, the press release said. Simmons reported that Kootenai Health is shifting staff from the other duties in clinics and outpatient areas to assist with the hospital surge. On Monday, Kootenai Health leadership reached out to the resources at the state level to request help. Quote, we need help finding enough nursing staff to care for the increased volumes of critical care and acute care patients, said Jeremy Evans, Chief Regional Operations Officer at Kootenai Health. Ooh, a lot of information thrown at you. I think, honestly, I mentioned it while I was reading. The majority of the people are not vaccinated.
We are hitting the point where I think maybe patience isn't necessarily the answer anymore. People who you heard for the longest time, well, why don't we just get a vaccine for it? So now they have the vaccine. And now those same people are like, well, I don't want to take that vaccine. You know, because they don't like being told what to do.
Sure. And honestly, that's kind of what it's come down to. Now, this is not talking about the rare instances where...
If you have an allergy to a vaccine...
Sure.
Or have like...
lowered immune system stuff.
Yeah, you're not an anti-vaxxer if you are a person who has... Like, you are allergic to
You have to special vaccine. Circumstances. Yeah. That's not who we're talking about.
But if you are a person who is just refusing it blatantly because you don't want to be told what to do, that is where we're starting to see a significant issue and a significant rise of that mentality. And I just don't understand where it's coming from. Maybe I don't understand the idea of acting petulant, but
there's conspiracy theories out there that try to justify it, but none of them are based in any fact.
Right.
And the fact that it's vaccines just in general speak for themselves. I mean, the fact that everyday, diseases, whatnot, that have been wiped off the face of the planet nearly.
There's more evidence to suggest that vaccines are helpful and work and are useful in our society than to suggest that they are harmful.
That's why we don't have to worry about,
polio.
Polio, exactly. That's just the first one that comes to mind. But yeah. I mean, even the Black Plague.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody's sitting around going, oh, I'm worried about getting the plague today.
Right.
It's because of vaccines.
Measles, mumps, and rubella, man. We don't have to worry about that anymore. Yep. Like,
it's not only from my personal stuff. I just, like my grandfather, he passed away a couple of years ago, but he got, and this guy who was in the military. So anybody who listens to this podcast that has been in the military knows that you get, every shot known to man, basically, right. Especially if you're getting deployed to a certain area. So he got all those shots, and then that man as long as I've been alive, got a flu shot every single year. And those ones are less effective than these ones. Like these ones, I got the J&J, which is only, what, 50, 60% effective?
Yeah.
Like I didn't get the two-step one. And this man got the flu shot, which is anywhere from like, you know, sometimes 16 to 20, 30 yeah. percent sometimes.
Even if it's just a matter of giving yourself something.
Yep.
Because also at the same time, like the next argument, well, I don't want to be a guinea pig. Well, you know what? Like at the end of the day, like if you don't have an adverse reaction, you still catch COVID, you still tried to help. You still tried to be a part of the solution instead of part of some sort of weird little fanatical resistance. That is the... It doesn't require a lot of effort for you to try and help.
I'm always open-minded on things. If somebody came up to me with a coherent, logical reason of like why this would be bad or something, I'd be more than willing to at least listen. Even if it's crazy, I get a kick out of conspiracy theories. They're fun. Listened to a fellow who told me about how we hadn't been to the moon before because it's impossible. Also a very fun and entertaining conversation. Not based in any fact whatsoever, but fun.
It just doesn't make any sense. Like at the end of the day, like I said, you can either try to be a part of the solution or you can be a part of a petulant resistance that doesn't really add. Like there's no reason for it. There's no reason to not try. Mm-hmm. And if you don't try and you want to act like somehow by trying your freedoms are being infringed upon.
Sure.
Like it just, there's no logic behind that line of thinking.
Sure.
But.
And I'm to play almost, not devil's advocate, but like a more middle ground of is like one of my, I know this sounds very selfish almost, but one of the many reasons to get a vaccine for me was that I was tired of wearing a mask.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like there's arguments, you know, about the effectiveness of masks and whatnot. We're not going to go down that road, but I was one way or the other, whether you believe that they work or not, or how effective they are. There's one way of getting out of it. Get a vaccine. And, you know, you can have your own opinions on if masks work or not. I think honestly, it just depends on how you use your mask and what your mask is and all that kind of stuff. Very, very much dependent on the situation. But you know what? What just solves all of that, get the vaccine. And I would sign me up.
Right.
So, yep. All right. If you're looking for a refreshing locally made beer, check out Radio Brewing at 319 Main Street in Uptown Kellogg. The tap room is open 7 days a week. They offer delicious craft beer and awesome snack and food options. To learn more about Radio Brewing, please visit them at radiobrewing.com. Radio Brewing, put radio in your mouth hole. That moves us on to Shoshone News Press headlines with Tuesday, August 10th. We'll start with your normal daily wildfire update for Shoshone County wildfires. We'll start with the Character Complex fire. Thankfully, we'll just preface with things are going well. Things are a lot better with the calmer, less hot weather and some rain contributing to the area. Lightning not so great for power poles locally, but for the fires themselves, things have been going well. As of August 9th, so the most recent update on the Character Complex fire hasn't come out yet. That's made up of the Deceitful and Pritchard fires. The Deceitful has burned 6,720 acres and is 7% contained, and the Pritchard fire 1,342 acres and is 75% contained. Both of them have lots of good progress happening on them. Deceitful has actually been sitting at zero for a while, so the fact that it's at seven now is definitely good. And the Pritchard fire should be at 100% containment here fairly soon. Jumping south into the southern parts of Shoshone County at the State Line Complex, we've got those. That one is made up of the multiple fires, but the main two ones are the Tumbledown fire at 9,146 acres burned, 5% containment, and the Dolly Creek fire at 831 acres, 46% contained. The Tumbledown fire was the one that implemented those very quick closures that we had very recently, where it went on a 5-mile run heading toward Avery. Avery is not threatened at the moment, but it did go on a run, and people in the Tin Can campground had to be evacuated.
Oh boy.
Yes. So with the good weather behaviors in the area, progress has been made on both of them. And basically what fire crews are watching right now on those complexes is we've got high heat coming back again, unfortunately, and dry conditions. So we'll see how that goes. More positive weather could definitely help them out. All right, moving on to Shoshone News Press headlines for August 10th. This is all me, as Josh was out of town. We're going to go with headline, Dunked for a good cause. Wallace High School alums support local group. Miners descended upon Wallace last weekend to catch up with old friends and partake in some good times. While many of these miners may also be or have worked underground, all of them are alums from Wallace High School or Our Lady of Lourdes Academy. Committee co-coordinator Marcy Heyman estimated that roughly 1,500 former Wallace graduates made their way into town last weekend for their most recent all-class reunion. Once their attendees were treated to the many events and amenities the town and the Silver Valley had to offer, from graduating class-designated hangouts and scavenger hunts to golf and live music, the city that they all at least once called home did not disappoint. Quote, "It was great. We got lots of appreciation from a lot of people, so that was really nice. I think they all had a good time," Heyman said. Amid all the hustle and bustle of the reunion, the Friends of the Wallace City Pool had also had a presence at the corner of 6th and Cedar Streets on Saturday. In an effort to raise even more money for the under-construction Wallace Pool, several notable locals volunteered to take the hot seat on the dunk tank, or in my case, a cold and windy seat, where passersby could pay for the chance to send them into the drink. Friends of the Wallace City Pool President Carissa Malone explained that while the current total remodel of the pool is underway and paid for, the group is continuing to raise money for future upgrades such as swim programs and or remodeling the pool house. Quote, "The dunk tank was a huge success. We made over $5,000 from the tank and another $4,000 from our swag. I think it was a pretty good intake for the weekend. If all goes according to plan, the Wallace Pool's new look will be finished by the summer of 2022. Josh will actually be working on a story on that this week. Speaking of funds for the good cause, Heyman believes the all-class reunion raised roughly $9,000 for the Wallace All-Class Scholarship, which is awarded to Wallace High School seniors. Heyman added that the reunion committee estimates that the next reunion will occur in roughly 5 years. Yeah, it was a good time. I was one of the many dunkies. Dunked.
All class reunions are always fun.
And oh, yeah, I say that
because, like, anyone who's ever graduated knows that, like there's like probably like 10 people that you probably really cared about from your class, mm-hmm. but there were also probably like 5 or 6 people from the class above you, and then 5 or 6 from the class below you. And then it's just funny how that works out. Like you would rather see the 30 people you liked from high school in total than try to pretend that you liked all 60 from your graduating class. And I say that with as much love in my heart for the Kellogg High School class of 2007. But
we're going to power through it.
And that's the truth.
Yep. So. All right. We're actually going to do 3 stories here for the show news press because we had 3 events going on the weekend. Yeah. Smoke on the Pavement. I also wrote this one. The big 50+1 anniversary of Pinehurst Days went off without a hitch last weekend as both adults and kids partook in the variety of events and activities that were offered. 3-day weekend festival started out semi-rough on Friday when a power pole fire near the vendor booths cut the geocaching event slightly short, but from then on, it was smooth sailing. Family-friendly events were plentiful as attendees enjoyed kids' activities offered at Real Life Ministries Silver Valley, such as an outdoor movie and water games. In addition to the breakfast offered by the Pinehurst Kingston Lions, a parade, car show, and golf tournament also got things moving Saturday morning. What drew the biggest crowd of the weekend, though, was undoubtedly Pinehurst Days' marquee event, the Burnouts, held on the Dyke Road, or Silver Valley Road, Saturday night. Organizer Nick Elam says that the squealing and wheeling of the 20 cars that took to the streets went over incredibly well with the crowd of approximately 1,500 people. Quote, "It was great. Things were a lot more organized compared to last year. We had a bigger area for the crowd as last year wasn't big enough," he said. Drivers were all responsible and willing to play the game. Same with the crowd. They were peaceful and everyone got along well. In addition to the roar of the engines and tires, spectators were also treated to colorful smoke that shot off of special tires that made vehicles came equipped with. After everyone had a chance to run, it was driver Rodney Cochran that came out with both the best overall and longest burn awards.
Sweet.
Yeah. The event wrapped up on Sunday morning with the kids' BMX races, which we included all of the winners of that in the story as well.
Did you make it out to the burnouts?
I did not personally make it out to the burnouts, no. But I had people that I knew. That was the only event. There were 3 events going on. There's only one of me. I could only make so many. But so
have you ever been to the burnouts then?
I have been to the burnouts, yes. Okay. You went the 2019, not last year. There was nothing last year, but.
Yeah. I didn't know if you had been, like, seen them in person.
Mm-mm, no.
Oh, yeah. You got to check those out sometime. Okay.
I will have to definitely swing by those for sure.
Next year, you might want to make sure you're at that one. It's just different. It's such a very unique thing to an event And I mean, you were part, you wrote the stories when they were getting that back and how excited they were.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, there's a following.
It's a very,
I'm very, oh, we don't need to beat around the bush. Like that's, it's redneck fun. It's a, like, yeah. It's some of the best events that go over here in the Valley and in North Idaho are, you know, I still to this day, the biggest populated event that I've been, that I've been a part of here since, you know, I've been here for 5.5 years now, was that demo derby that was put on by the Lions.
Yep.
You know, the demo derby and the drive-in theater. That got the biggest turnout by far. So that stuff is fun. There's nothing wrong with that.
Checks the boxes.
It does. All right. Last story that we're going to talk about in Shoshone News Press headlines, back-to-back King of the Hard Rock. And this is, I wrote this one as well. Another year, another chance for the miners of the Silver Valley to prove their mettle. Some of the most talented miners in the area and beyond gathered at Jean Day Park last Saturday for the 33rd annual Coeur d'Alene District Mining Contest to show off their skills. Guy Sandy, the Coeur d'Alene District Mining Contest Committee Secretary, explains that just like previous years, the male portion of the competition includes four primary solo events, including hand mucking, spike driving, 12B machine mucking, and single jackleg. There's also a team jackleg event in which two miners each drill a 4-foot hole, swapping between a single jackleg machine. Competitors who sign up for all four solo events are eligible to win the title of all-around miner, which recognizes the competitor who places highest in all four solo events. This year's title once again, I thought this is the cool part, once again went to Matt Karst with the Lucky Friday Mine in Mullen, who finished with 7 total points. So it's like golf, the lowest point total wins. Karst now has back-to-back all-around minor wins as he took the top spot in the last 2019 event as well with 8 points. What largely earned him the title this year was his impressive first place finish in the hand mucking and spike driving events, which finishing times of 107.14 and 33 seconds respectively. He also placed second in the 12B machine mucking and third in single jackleg. Byron Bratton with the Lucky Friday is also now the back-to-back runner-up to Karst, finishing just behind him with 13 total points this year and 14 in 2019. Wonder if there's a little rivalry going on between those guys. Be curious. The team of Vince Lee and Daniel Miles ended up walking away with the first place in team jackleg, finishing with 2 minutes and 18 seconds. Women participants went head-to-head as well in a separate hand-mucking event. Casey Figueroa with the Lucky Friday came out on top with a time of 51 seconds, beating out the other three participants. Kids ages 5 and 6 were also invited to join in on the fun and competed in hand-mucking. The top young mucker this year was Bentley Karst with a time of 1 minute and 21 seconds. All the Karsts just winning everything. This year's participants were right in line with the average turnout compared to previous years, but a break in hot weather provided cooler temperatures to those who did come, which allowed competitors and spectators a great place to look and enjoy the event.
So my mother-in-law actually used to work for the guy who originally organized the mining competition.
Oh, really?
LaVon Fawcett.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I skipped over that part of the story. But
So it's kind of funny because she used to be very much... Very much involved.
That's very cool. I've said it for a while. I think it's honestly one of the more underrated, that and the Mullen Fireman Festival are very undersold, underrated events that happen here in the Valley that I feel like, got a little more, you know, spark.
Yeah.
They could be, you know, like, Lumberjack Days, you know, like that.
Osborne doesn't have, like, Wallace has all their festivals. Yeah. Kellogg used to do Noah Kellogg Days, but now, really, they have their farmers market and they have Silver Hoops, and those are really probably their.
And they didn't name it O'Rourke Days.
Oh, for good reason. O'Rourke was a thief and a criminal. you know, Piners has Piners Days. Osborne really doesn't have that big event, and I think they could probably tie it into the mining competition.
They honestly if they could just have people come out to Jean Day Park.
Yeah, you could call it Jean Days.
Oh, I like that. I wonder who it's named after.
Jean Day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's a person. Jean Day Park.
What did he do?
I don't know.
Stuff?
Might have to get the history on that.
There we go. We just found ourselves another feature story.
Yeah. Well, that's going to take us right into Watts Appliance. Watts Appliance has been providing incomparable customer service to the Silver Valley for over 50 years. The family-owned and operated business has a wealth of knowledge regarding all appliances and the brands that they sell. Whether you're in need of a new washing machine or have questions about refrigerators, Watts Appliance is ready to help. Visit wattsappliance.com or stop by and visit them at 3 North Division Street in Pinehurst. And what's happening this this week is going to take us to Shoshone County News Press, August 13th, 1986. Headline, Ranchers Concerned About Proposed Cataldo Ramp. This is by Trudy Welsh. Caution flags went up at Monday's Kootenai County Waterways Committee meeting when Shoshone County announced plans to use boat funds collected there for a ramp at Cataldo. Increased boat traffic would compound existing erosion problems, said several Waterways Committee members and ranchers owning land along the Coeur d'Alene River. The ranchers are concerned enough about the washing riverbanks that they petitioned the University of Idaho in June to do an erosion control study, said Rose Fritchie, a member of the Kootenai Shoshone Soil Conservation District. The county commissioners, having roughly $60,000 in stockpiled state boat license funds to spend, made the Cataldo site their top priority because Shoshone County residents frequently use the area, said Bob Perkins, a waterways advisor to the commissioners. Large boats and thus many erosion problems could be eliminated by installing a small prefabricated ramp on property owned by Bunker Hill Limited Partnership, Perkins said. Quote, so many fishermen like the area up there for the cutthroat, and they usually use small boats, he said. So this was the debate that raged on that led to the building of the Cataldo boat launch. And there was, it actually got quite contentious. Mm. And it's one of the few times where you'll see, oh, well, you know what, we're going to call in the University of Idaho to get a study done so the EPA can say that you can't do that here. They were actively seeking out the EPA to say that a boat launch would create more problems. Mm-hmm. So it's all funny just when you look back on history, and it's a history is very much a what have you done for me lately?
Oh yeah,
concept.
Very and, much so.
But you know what? About almost 40 years ago, that was what's happening.
That was what's happening.
Yeah.
Restore your smile and restore your confidence. Complete Dental Care delivers quality dental care and complete satisfaction with state-of-the-art technology. They guarantee a positive dental experience, a bright smile, and restored confidence. Schedule your appointment today. Call 208-682-4540. Complete Dental Care is located at 418 West Cameron Avenue in Kellogg. To learn more, visit CompleteDentalNW.com. Mm. That moves us north to the Bonner County Daily Bee headlines coming out of Sandpoint. Saturday, August 7th. Bonner County moves to online auctions. This is by Anissa Keith. Bonner County is launching an online presence for their government auctions beginning in early autumn. Public Surplus will serve as platform for the county in the sale of items that are in the county's possession. Jesse Webster, business operator manager for the county, brought the idea before the commissioners at the end of the Tuesday's meeting. Quote, anything valued at over $250 needs to be sold in an auction, she said. Putting together a county auction is a tremendous amount of work. Working with the online auction platform will help reduce the amount of work the county does when putting on a public auction. Public Surplus handles everything involved in the auction besides creating the listing or delivering the items. The purchasing auction items through the platform will be charged a 10.5% buyer's fee. Quote, we get virtually nothing for county property, said Commissioner Dan McDonald at the meeting. When you look at the numbers that these kinds of sites get, they're demonstrably larger. A big portion of the county surplus is vehicles. Vehicles that sometimes wait up to 3 years before the next upcoming auction. Even though sales at auctions generate income, the main benefit to the county is in the form of open storage spaces. Before, county auctions would take place once every 2 to 3 years. That waiting time is set to be largely reduced because auctions will continuously be posted to Public Surplus. Webster found out about Public Surplus after being approached by a different organization about arranging online auctions through their platform, but they were not cost-effective for the county. Quote, as a government agency, we're required to look for cheaper options, Webster said in an interview on Wednesday. The city of Sandpoint is already utilizing the site, even though there are no items currently listed. Buyers can expect to see mainly office furnishings and vehicles on the county's offerings. Surplus from the sheriff or treasurer's office are not considered a part of county inventory. At this time, they plan to continue their already established auction practices. Well, other than that last part there, it sounded like that was a really good idea.
Yeah.
Sounds like they should all probably go to an online platform. It seems a little bit easier, but
be kind of fun.
It would be very fun.
eBay.
Just getting on there like eBay.
Countywide eBay.
I like that.
Moving ahead to Sunday, August 8th. Community embraces return of the Longbridge Swim. This is by Dylan Green, the sports editor up there at the B. I actually remember reading about them having to cancel it last year, so I'm kind of happy to read this story. A familiar sight returned to Lake Ponderay on Saturday as over 500 swimmers hit the water for the 26th annual Longbridge Swim. The event has been a local favorite ever since Eric Ridgway founded the swim in 1995. Swimmers of all ages and from all over are attracted to the 1.76 mile challenge. It's a special event, but this year it felt a little bit different. In 2020, the swim was taken away due to the COVID-19 pandemic, but the participants made up for lost time by putting on a show for the hundreds of onlookers lining the long bridge who cheered them on from the first stroke to the final push over the finish line. The skies overhead were overcast, but that didn't dampen the mood one bit. Logan Robillard from Coeur d'Alene was the first swimmer to reach Dog Beach with a time of 34 minutes, 1 second. This was the fourth long bridge swim for the 17-year-old from Lake City High School, and he was determined to take home all the glory. Quote, "I've been getting real close to that first place spot every time, but there's always been someone faster," he said. "So it feels good to finally get to that top spot. I know I had some competition at the beginning, so that was great." Robillard didn't just win. He finished over 2 minutes ahead of his next closest competitor, fellow 17-year-old Matthew Mance. Robillard felt confident in his ability to pull away in the last half mile of the race, and he did just that. The first female to cross the line was also from Coeur d'Alene, Riley Taylor, age 15, who took 14th with a time of 41 minutes and 20 seconds. One thing that the Long Bridge Swim has shown over the years is that age is just a number. Nobody encapsulates that message more than 92-year-old Charles Chuck Milton. In 2019, he became the oldest swimmer to finish the event at 90 years old. After the swim was canceled in 2020, Milton decided to come back for another year. He wasn't going to pass up the opportunity to do it again. Jim Zuberbuehler, the Long Bridge Swim race director, was side by side with Milton during the entire swim on Saturday. He helped guide him through the water all the way to the finish. With his son Charles Jr. next to him as he stepped over the line, Milton raised his hands in the air to celebrate breaking his own record. He finished in 1 hour, 44 minutes, and 44 seconds. Milton has swam a mile nearly every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday since he was 67. He's only missed a handful of days, and when he's broken the routine, he's had good reasons for doing so. Over the years, lightning has prevented him from touching the water 3 times.
Good for him.
Yeah, that's a baller story.
That is, what a...
Happy to hear that that came back. It is quite cool. I love that the two top finishers were 17-year-olds, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's...
That is pretty cool.
Pretty incredible.
Yep. All right, moving on. A woman sentenced on drug offenses by Anissa Keith. A woman facing charges out of both Bonner and Kootenai counties for possession of dangerous drugs was sentenced in First District Court on Friday to 2 to 6 years in the Idaho Department of Corrections. Carolina Villanueva, 51, took a plea deal on June 7th, admitting to possession of methamphetamine. In exchange for the plea, 5 misdemeanor charges of possession of paraphernalia, possession of marijuana, open container, and persistent violation were dropped. Villanueva was pulled over February 1st on U.S. 95 and Dufert on Durfort Road for failing to stay in her lane. Sheriff's Deputy Paul Malland learned she was serving probation out of Kootenai County and gained permission from her probation officer to conduct a search. Malland discovered methamphetamine and an open alcoholic beverage in the center console. In Villanueva's purse, Malland found more methamphetamine in pre-measured amounts. Also found were multiple scales, small tubes, and note cards with dollar amounts written on them. Boy, I wonder what she was doing. After she was read her rights, Villanueva admitted to Malland that she was intending to sell methamphetamine, according to court records. Okay, so she wasn't even going to deny it. The rest fell within a 2-year probation term for Villanueva was serving from a previous Kootenai County case. As part of a plea agreement in that case on October 14, 2020, Villanueva was placed on 2 years of supervised probation for a count of possession of methamphetamine with intent to sell. Kootenai County First District Judge Rich Christensen gave jurisdiction of his case over to Bonner County First District Judge Barbara Buchanan. On June 8th, Villanueva appeared before Buchanan with a plea deal admitting to violating probation and possession of methamphetamine with intent to sell. Sentenced from 2 to 6 years, Villanueva will spend the first year of her sentence in the court's retained jurisdiction program.
Interesting.
Don't do drugs.
Right. Moving along to today, August 10th, Trestle Creek Complex unaffected by the rain. This is by Anissa Keith. Monday's 1 month anniversary of the Trestle Creek Complex fire saw 0% containment and uneasiness over the week's rising temperatures. The fire, located about 4 miles north of Hope, is within 1 mile of residences in the Flume Creek area and within half a mile of residences near the main fire. The main fire is in the Trestle Creek Complex has not moved, according to the latest InsaWeb report on the fire. Quote, crews have been diligent in setting up fire hose lines, pumps, and sprinkler systems as a precautionary measure, fire officials said during regarding the proximity of the fires to residences on InsaWeb, an interagency fire tracking website. Spot fires have been observed by firefighters 3/4 of a mile from the main fire. Burning materials rolling down steep terrain are also credited with starting spot fires on the complex. Fire crews are clearing the west side of the fire on Forest Road 1082. Old logging roads and properties are also being identified in efforts to more easily defend against the fire, officials said on the website. Sam Owen Fire District is continuing to implement a structure protection plan to protect private residences in the area by utilizing pumps, hoses, and sprinkler systems. Residents in Trestle Creek, Trout Creek, and Flume Creek areas remain in ready status, they added. Quote, although cooler temperatures, higher humidity, and a little rain worked in our favor, it has not been sufficient to shift the fire danger level, according to fire officials on the InsaWeb database. Roads and trails surrounding the Trestle Creek remain closed. Road closures beginning on Highway 200. Closures proceed northeast along the forest boundary until reaching the peak of Mount Ponderay. Continuing south, closures continue along the forest boundary to the headwaters of Fork Creek and onwards to Forest Road 1184. Closures continue west until reaching Lightning Creek Road, that's Forest Road 419, proceeding to the forest boundary until converging with Highway 200. Citing high winds, previous containment efforts on the fire have experienced setbacks. A Nevada Type 3 incident team resumed control over the fire on August 4th. Sparked by lightning strikes on January 9th, the Trestle Creek complex began as 6 independent fires before several of the fires merged together.
July 9th.
Once all the largest of the fires, Trestle Fire 6, was contained, authority of the complex was transferred back to regional agencies. However, due to the high winds and high temperatures, containment efforts were hampered, and the Nevada Type 3 team resumed management. To date, the Trestle complex has burned 3,586 acres. 98 fire personnel are fighting the fire. For the most up-to-date information, go to insaweb.nwcg.gov and search Trestle Creek Complex. The Pioneer Fire, 2 miles north of Priest River, continues to be 100% contained and is undergoing mop-up operations. The Burnt Peak Fire, 9 miles southwest of Troy, Montana, has burned 3,560 acres and is 46% contained. Indirect firefighting efforts by Great Basin Team 6 are being implemented due to the lack of hand crews, which could create the potential for fire growth. Torching, flanking, and backing techniques are being used to fight the fire. The same team fighting the Burnt Peak Fire are also fighting the South Yak Fire, 4 miles northwest of Troy, burning 10,388 acres. The perimeter of the South Yak Fire is 34% contained. As with the Burnt Peak Fire, torching, flanking, and backing techniques are being implemented.
Okay, there's the latest update on the fires up in Bonner County.
Yeah. Well, that's sad.
It is. But, I mean, hopefully it'll get better.
Not this week, man.
No. Well, it's
supposed to hit 100 degrees a couple different times,
I think. I know. And then it gets better next week. At least that was what my 10-day forecast said.
Yeah. Oh. It's just a bummer.
Yep, it is. Well, that's it for today. Thanks again for everybody for listening in. We really appreciate it. Please like, comment, and share all of our stuff on social media. If you're interested in the stories we talked about today or the ones we did not, check us out at www.quarterlanepress.com, shoshonnewspress.com, bonnercandidatedb.com, or thebonnersferryherald.com. If you listen to us on a podcatcher, please subscribe and or like or follow us so you can get every episode as soon as it comes out. And please leave a nice review. 5 stars.
Yes.
Or 5 out of 5 or... like, or however the rating the arbitrary rating system is on podcatchers nowadays.
Unless you're going to leave a bad one, then don't bother.
Then don't do that. We don't appreciate that at all. Just get a hold of us. Say like, hey, I'd give you guys a 5, but there's not enough Pun Santa.
Oh, man.
More cowbell, you know, or something along those lines. Once again, we'd like to thank this week's title sponsor, Bank CDA. What is your relationship status with your bank? It's time to go steady with Bank CDA. You want local, you want flexible, you want Bank CDA. To learn more, please visit bankcda.com. All right. Once again, everybody, thanks again for listening in, and we'll see you on Friday.
Bye-bye.